It's time for the
What in the
podcast.
Tonight we continue our haunted road trip down historic Route 66. We'll be stopping in the states of Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas to see what sort of haunts we can find. Welcome to episode 106 of What in the podcast.
Welcome to the What in the podcast with your hosts, Kent Whittington
and Adriana Comito
and Tracy Lynn Hernandez.
Hello and welcome to the What in the podcast. I'm not yelling tonight. I am sick.
As and I am tired.
As is all of us, actually. We're all sick.
And tired.
Tracy got it first. Gave it to her parents. I'm kidding.
No.
I'm kidding. I know you didn't.
Well, the kid got it first. I brought home something from where I nanny, but it mutated because she had what I had first was nowhere near as bad as what I had second.
Right. Okay.
And so my kid ended up at the emergency room on Sunday. Needed two IV bags put in an inversion table to get blood flowing the right direction. And then was sent home Sunday afternoon. With a positive test of influenza A. And then my dad started coughing. And then my dad had to go to the hospital Thanksgiving night. We haven't had Thanksgiving dinner, by the way.
Yeah, I saw your mom's post. That's still on hold.
Yep. And then dad was in the emergency room Thursday night. He stayed through Saturday afternoon in the hospital. He got IVs and drugs and all that fun stuff. And Friday night, went and saw him. So, okay, cool. Came home and then probably got sick myself.
Uh-huh.
Spent 22 hours a day asleep, unless I was blowing my nose.
Well, at our house, Adri got it first.
And then later on.
I can only assume it had something to do with our trip to Jackson. We made another trip out to Jackson to hit the antique shops. And there was a lot of people because it was their Christmas parade kickoff.
They were having horse-drawn carriage rides and Santa pictures.
Yeah, by the time we left, the police were already blocking off Main Street. But it was wall-to-wall people.
We left before the festivities really started.
So pretty sure if Adri got sick, that was probably where it happened. Me, of course, work. A lot of people are calling out sick right now. I worked as well as I could up to the point of my Friday. I got through it and probably came home with this. No fun.
Well, but, I missed working with I'm a nanny. I missed work until today.
Yep.
And when I walked in today, I was told, are you sure you can be here? I'm like, if I stay home, I might end up murdering someone. Probably myself.
Fair enough. Well, the whole reason that we're podcasting sick tonight, and I'm sorry for you guys who are sick, but I made a promise on our last podcast episode that we would be gone. We would be quiet for 3 weeks and that we would be back this week for our next episode so we can continue our travels down haunted Route 66. So that's where we're going tonight. We left off, where were we? Arizona, I think.
Arizona.
All right. And I know in the song you're supposed to go east to west, but we live on the west coast, so we're going west to east.
We did backwards.
Yeah, we did backwards. But like I said, we live on the west coast, so if we're traveling, we got to go east. I'm not wrong, am I?
You broke Tracy.
That's not news.
Yes, but it's worse when she's sick.
Well, if we break each other, we're all sick tonight. That could be catastrophic. Anyway,
you still there, Tracy? Why would you want to put a straw in a cat?
Uh-oh, Tracy got a little quiet here.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I hear you now. You hear that Facebook algorithm? You're screwing up our volume. Anyway, and there go, and then we lost the picture again, but that's all right. So long as we can still hear you, Tracy, it's all good.
Anyway, I swear.
Anyway,
if I go this way,
we were
minimize it.
So we were on our route
from the peanut gallery.
So we were on our route from California, heading east, and we took our time to stop off in Arizona for a while. So we're going to start there. Who wants to start? Adri's nodding no.
I can start. If you don't mind me talking, here we go.
If you can do it, go for it. We'll do our best here.
So tonight we're starting off with the Haunted Monte Vista Hotel in Flagstaff, Arizona. Located along Old Route 66 in Flagstaff, Arizona, is the motel. Opening on New Year's Day in 1927, this historic hotel, listed in the National Register of Historic Places, has been fully restored to its former glory and continues to serve the traveling public today. Along with playing host to numerous famous figures over the years, such as John Wayne, Bing Crosby, Harry Truman, and it was also apparently home to a number of unearthly figures. This old hotel is one of the very few American hotels built entirely from public taxes. When, in 1924, a man by the name of V.M. Sulfur spearheaded the local fundraising campaign to build the hotel. In 1924, tourism was burgeoning business in Flagstaff, where their lodging was too scarce to keep visitors in town to spend their hard-earned dollars. Sulfur's efforts resulted in a city-voted ordinance to establish a municipal bond to build the hotel. I know I can read. After its opening, the hotel was popular not only among tourists, but also as a favorite of the locals, and quickly coined the phrase, "Meet me at the Monte V." In its first year, the hotel hosted Mary Costigan's daily three-hour radio show from Room 105. Costigan was the first American woman to be granted a radio broadcasting license. Opening during the Prohibition era, this did not stop the Hotel Monte Vista's lounge from ignoring the law and running a profitable bootlegging operation out of Flagstaff's most popular speakeasy. However, in 1931, the place was raided by local officials and shut down, only to resume the business 2 years later when Prohibition finally came to an end. For 5 years between 1935 and 1940, the hotel lounge and lobby were offered as many guests a wide range of slot machines to choose from, the only ones ever in Flagstaff. In the 1940s and 50s, Western movies became the choice of American public, and more than 100 movies were filmed in nearby Sedona and Oak Creek Canyon. During these filmings, the hotel hosted such famous guests as Jane Russell, Gary Cooper, Spencer Tracy, John Wayne, Bing Crosby. In the rooms of this hotel, the scene from Casablanca was filmed. In fact, it was John Wayne who reported seeing one of the first hotel ghosts in the 1950s, describing the spirit as friendly. This benevolent ghost evidently made a brief appearance in the movie star's room. In the 1970s, three men robbed the Flagstaff Bank near the hotel, where one of the men was shot during their escape from the bank. Lying low and celebrating their successful robbery, the trio stopped at the Monte Vista Lounge for a drink. However, the wounded man's gunshot injury was obviously more serious than any of them had anticipated, because before he even finished his first drink, he died right there in the lounge. Today, staff and guests feel as if the dead bandit is one of the many spirits that haunt the building. One manager reported that he could hear an eerie voice that said, "Hello," or "Good morning," when he opened the bar each day. Others have told stories of feeling a ghostly presence while enjoying a drink from the cocktail lounge. Though this might be the ghost of a gunman, the hotel has such past shootings, cowboys on horseback in the lobby, drunken brawls that aren't really sure. All types of other strange phenomena are reported at the hotel by spirits who make noise, move furniture around, make sudden appearances, ring the lobby telephone, knock things down. Both employees and guests have heard band music coming from the second floor lobby when there's no band playing. Reportedly, the staff has become so accustomed to the odd occurrence, it's just become a joke to them. In room 210, called the Zane Gray room, many guests have been awakened in the night by a phantom bellboy who knocks on the door with the statement that the room service has arrived. However, When guests open the door, they see nothing but an empty hallway, not a big glimpse of someone escaping down the long corridor. Others have reported seeing the image of a woman who wanders the halls outside this room. Supposedly, the hotel avoids putting guests with pets in this room because dogs go crazy with fear and tear up the room. Ooh. This floor is evidently a hub of ghostly activity. Just down the hall in room 220, all types of strange activity reported. Evidently, in the early 1980s, this room played host to an eccentric long-term boarder who was known to hang raw meat from the chandelier. Okay. Sometime later, he died in his room, and his body was not discovered for several days.
I wonder if he's related to Lady Gaga.
Possible? Today, guests often complain about hearing coughing and other noises from the otherwise empty room. At one time, after a maintenance man had made several repairs to the room, he turned off the light and locked the door. However, returning just 5 minutes later, the light was backed on, the bed linen strip, television broadcasting at full blast. In the Gary Cooper room, many guests have reported being unnerved by the sure feeling that someone was watching them. Reportedly, two prostitutes were murdered in this room when they were thrown out the window. Joy. The two painted ladies have also been reportedly sighted in the pool hall and the lounge. Yet another room, room 305, the ghost of a female apparition is often reported to be sitting in the rocking chair. Further, if the cleaning staff moves the chair, the next day it will always appear next to the window. The Hotel Monte Vista is the longest publicly held commercial hotel in the history of America, finally selling to a private individual in the early 1960s. Located in 100 North San Francisco Street, the old hotel has tales of scandal, ghost stories, and continues to entertain.
And good job, Tracy, getting through that. Yay.
Yay.
And then I start coughing again.
So we have a lady who's had her own 3-hour radio show, kind of like the first podcaster ever when you think about it.
This is true.
And somebody who decorated his room with meat.
Yeah, because,
You know, I almost wonder, what era was that in? Was he in the border? Does it say?
Probably the 30s, I'm guessing.
The only reason I ask is hanging meat from a chandelier might be for drying it purposes, kind of thing. Like,
you think he's making jerky?
Anything's
possible.
In his
hotel room?
You know, people have done stranger things.
This is true. All right. Who wants to handle the next part of our route?
I guess I'll do it.
Okay.
Okay. One second, everybody.
It was,
to answer your question, it was the 80s.
The what?
It was the 80s?
The 80s?
In the early 80s, this room played host to an eccentric long-term hoarder who was known to hang raw meat from the chandelier.
Okay, that's disgusting. You think like Old West or something, maybe? Making hard tack kind of thing or something. But yeah, ew.
Also, if it was jerky, he would have to keep that room very hot.
Some people live in sweat lodges. You never know.
I think it's a bit of a stretch.
Remind me, I have to get that jerky recipe from my sister.
Okay.
Jerky.
She makes some of the best homemade jerky,
Step
man.
One, hang your jerky from the chandelier. Yes.
Okay, ow, my head. This is not funny. Stop making me laugh. Okay. Haunted Museum Club in Flagstaff, Arizona. The Museum Club, a Route 66 icon in Flagstaff, Arizona, began its life as the boyhood dream of taxidermist Dean Eldridge in 1931. When Eldridge found a petrified frog as a child in Wisconsin, it spurred a lifetime as a sportsman, adventurer, and a collector. Dean began his taxidermy business in 1918. In the early 1930s, Eldridge saw an opportunity when he purchased a piece of federal land 3 miles east of Flagstaff on Route 66. Soon he hired unemployed lumberjacks to cut trees, haul them to his property, and build what he touted as the biggest log cabin in the world. Later, he would revise his claim to the biggest log cabin in the nation, then to the biggest log cabin in Arizona. In any case, he finally had a showplace for his lifetime collection of stuffed animals. Six-legged sheep, Winchester rifles, Indian artifacts, two-headed calves, and more than 30,000 other items. Operating as a museum, taxidermist shop, and trading post, scores of Route 66ers stopped in to visit Dean and his collection during the 5 years that he operated the museum. Before long, locals dubbed the museum the Zoo, a name that stuck with the building to this day.
I think I've heard of the zoo.
I have heard of it.
I think I saw it on a documentary about Route 66.
Taxidermy has always fascinated me. I know I'm twisted, whatever, but there's a taxidermist place over in Roseville that I've always wanted to visit.
Well, this guy, I mean, he made his own fanciful taxidermy figures and all that. So.
Oh, yeah. And I find it fascinating. Yeah. Like I said, well, what we were just watching with the...
and
Morticia, Wednesday. Anyway,
the new
spoilers.
Netflix series Wednesday.
Yes. Spoilers. Brain's gone. I couldn't remember where I saw all the taxidermy critters. My brain just... Okay. Over the years... Okay, wait. Unfortunately, when Eldridge died of cancer, most of his collection was sold and the building was purchased by a Flagstaff saddle maker named Doc Williams. In 1936, Williams, profiting from the many travelers of the Mother Road and the end of Prohibition, opened a nightclub that was an immediate success. Over the years, the building passed through several owners and survived as a nightclub, recording studio, and roadhouse. By the 1950s, the club had deteriorated to a rough and tumble roadhouse, patronized by a crowd that oftentimes preferred a little blood with its beer. Fun.
Guess they could have used Patrick Swayze, huh?
Grown. In 1963, Don Scott, a steel guitarist who'd spent time with Bob Willis, Texas Playboys, bought the club and moved to Flagstaff along with his wife, Thorna. Scott wasted no time turning the club into a country music dance hall and began to book old friends like Willis and new ones like Waylon Jennings. I know this place. Okay. Willie Nelson, Pappy, as Scott was called by his friends and many contacts in the music industry. Before long, he put the club on the map in the Western swing circuit. Wynn Stewart, Wanda Jackson, and the Texas Playboys were just a few of the acts which appeared at the museum club. Many aspiring recording artists making the pilgrimage from Nashville to Las Vegas would book into the museum club. Some, like Barbara Mandrell, simply showed up, grabbed a guitar, and played impromptu. Living in an upstairs apartment in the building, both Don and Thorna Scott were active in running the successful business until 1973, when a tragedy ended Thorna's life. After a long night, the couple had closed the club. Thorna headed upstairs to retire for the evening, leaving Don behind on the first floor to finish up. However, before she reached the apartment, she apparently tripped and fell from near the top of the stairs, breaking her neck. Thorna lapsed into a coma, and a few weeks later, she died. Don Scott became terribly despondent after her death, suffering from constant memories of the event and loneliness. Unable to endure the pain any longer, Don took his own life in 1975 by killing himself with a rifle in front of the fireplace.
Wow. She fell, broke her neck, and survived in a coma.
Until she died later.
Until she died later. That's a heck of a way to go.
That's a long, painful drawn out. Just because you're in a coma doesn't mean you're not in pain.
Doesn't mean you don't hurt.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So.
That's a heck of a thing.
Yeah.
But I could see why he was so despondent after her death.
True love, too. I think they were together for a long time.
Well, yeah. Anyway, please continue. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Didn't mean to interrupt.
It's what we do. Okay. In 1978, Martin and Stacy Zanzuki,
I think, yeah.
Bought the club and began extensive restorations and added taxidermy mounts, antlers, and period pieces to the club. Today, the zoo continues to host the rising stars of country music and new sounds of Nashville. Recent concert performances have included Asleep at the Wheel, Marty Brown, and the Clinton Category. Popular groups such as Mogulin and Rednecks the Band play regularly at the museum club. Interestingly, the club not only hosts its many country western musicians and fans, but also the ghosts of former owners Don and Thorna Scott. Signs that Don and Thorna never left are evident to employees as well as guests. Footsteps and creaks are often heard coming from the upstairs floor where they once lived. What did you do?
I didn't do anything. Nobody did anything. Your screen
I touched nothing.
Oh, her screen jumped. She's back at the beginning.
Oh,
do you want me to pick up where you left off, dear?
No, I'd like to find it. Give me a minute.
Okay.
I didn't touch anything. It was like somebody touched it. I thought you did it. So
nope,
hold
just
on.
Techno foo.
Hold on. I will find it. Dang it. I will find it.
Meanwhile, we wait.
I took a breath and let's see.
Yeah, blew on your screen and blew it up. Yay! Yep.
Yeah.
Cue the Jeopardy music.
Where they once lived, lights had a have a habit of flickering on and off. Chairs rock back and forth on their own, and fires have been lit in the hearth when no one is around. That's scary. I'm Thorna. Thorna apparently makes her appearance at all hours of the day, often seen on the back stairway and the back bar, where confused patrons sometimes mistake her for a bartender. She's also been seen in dark corner booths too. Occasionally, customers will buy her a drink only to find she has vanished when they return. One man who lived in the upstairs apartment for a time said he was pinned to the floor by a friendly female ghost. Evidently, Thorna has a sense of humor in her life beyond the living, as she stated to the man while sitting on his chest, "You only need to fear the living." Yeah, then the apparition disappeared, wasting no time. The tenant broke through the upstairs window, ran across the roof, and disappeared, never to return. Okay.
Can't say I blame the guy.
Can't say I blame him. She didn't do anything to him. I mean, she pulled him down.
She's playful. I think I like her. I'd like to go meet this ghost. I wouldn't mind meeting her.
Yeah. She's not violent. She didn't hurt him. She just held him still. One bartender just starting her shift was surprised to see the bar shelf disarrayed. Beer bottles were switched around, drink mixes were at the wrong end, and some liquor bottles had been knocked over. Because the bar area had been straightened up the night before, she had no choice but to blame it on the Scots. Many guests of the establishment have taken pictures and videos where they report ghost-like images appearing on the film. Recently, one employee of the museum club reports that though the power in the upstairs floor has been shut off, the lights have been coming on more and more often. Others have reported also seeing lights from the street while driving by late at night. Once located on the outskirts of town, this old highway watering hole is a Route 66 throwback, now surrounded by present-day Flagstaff. Today, the Museum Club is a popular roadhouse and dance club offering the best in live country western and after-hours entertainment. Check out the great music at the Museum Club, and while you're there, keep your eyes out for the ghosts. For a ghost or two lurking in the background. The museum club is 2.5 miles east of downtown Flagstaff on Route 66.
Sounds like there's a lot of reasons to visit this place.
Yeah.
Not just the taxidermy animals, but the country music and two playful spirits, particularly Thorna.
Yes. I mean, if she had pinned me down and said that, I'd be too busy laughing instead of running, because that's the same thing my sister said after going through the haunted road in Santa Rosa.
Yep. Pin you down, say you only need to fear the living. I'd say, no kidding. Really, you think? Okay, so it's my turn now, I guess. We're going to go to the haunted Red Garter Inn in Williams, Arizona. So while bunking down at the Red Garter Inn in Williams, Arizona, you will not only sleep alongside a rich history, but perhaps even a ghost. The building that houses the Red Garter has been standing for more than a century, serving as a saloon, a bordello, a rooming house, a general store, and more. Built in 1897 by August Tetzlaff, a German tailor, Tetzlaff planned to cash in on the expected silver and copper boom anticipated at the Grand Canyon. The building first housed a saloon on the first floor and a brothel with a parlor and 8 cribs upstairs, where the girls were often known to hang out of the windows, calling to the working men below. A steep flight of stairs called the Cowboy Endurance Test led to the girls' upstairs rooms. The second floor also boasted a two-story outhouse off the back of the building.
Wait, what?
A two-story outhouse off the back of the building.
Ew.
I get the feeling I want to be on the top, not the bottom.
Yeah, it's like a two-story outhouse. I'm sorry.
So anyway, it's housed off the back of the building so that brothel guests wouldn't have to navigate the steep stairs once again. Behind the saloon, 2 rear rooms of the building once housed Chinese railroad workers who both lived and operated a chop house and opium den crowded into the small space. During this time, the local sheriff was often called to the site to investigate a murder, only to arrive to find nothing out of the ordinary. At one point, the tales became so frequent that the local garbage collector was lowered into the cesspool below the outhouses to look for bodies. Only to be lifted again, having found nothing. Talk about a dirty job.
Ew.
The saloon was operated for years by Lugino Mora, a notable figure as a U.S. cavalry scout, and his heroism in the Indian Wars. Born in 1848 in Socorro, New Mexico, Lugino also became legendary in Williams for having 5 wives and 25 children over the years. Must be Mormon. When his youngest child was born, his oldest child was 60 years old.
Oh, God.
Oh. Yeah.
Charlie Chaplin was in his 80s when he had his last kid, and he just couldn't pick him up anymore. Well,
apparently, Chaplin idolized this guy. The saloon and bordello thrived as miners, loggers, cowboys, and railroad workers stopped in for a drink and often to partake of the painted ladies upstairs.
Oh, the what? Oh, painted.
Yeah, you know. If they can make the up the endurance, the cowboy endurance test there.
It didn't sound like you said painted at first. Sorry.
That's because I have a cold. Anyway,
I know.
By the turn of the century, Williams had gained a reputation as a rough and rowdy frontier town filled with saloons, brothels, gambling houses, and opium dens. Soon the town restricted the houses of vice to an area called Saloon Row on Railroad Avenue. Though Arizona outlawed prostitution in 1907, the law was only loosely enforced. Even during Prohibition, the saloon and brothel continued to operate, hiding its bar and poker tables behind a divider. Both businesses continued to operate successfully until the mid-1940s, when a murder was committed on the stairs of the Red Garter, leading to a citywide crackdown on houses of ill repute. The crackdown ultimately led to the closure of the saloon and brothel after more than 40 years of operation. Over the next few decades, the building would house different types of businesses, including a rooming house and general store. In 1979, a man named John Holst bought the building but continued to lease it out until 1994. At that time, Holst renovated the building, converting the 8 cribs into 4 guest rooms, each with its own bathroom, and opened the Red Garter Bed and Bakery. After opening, guests and staff began to report ghostly activity, including the sound of footsteps when no one was around, doors mysteriously slamming, and strange clunking noises heard throughout the building. Though one might think that the spiritual activity could be attributed to the murder that occurred on the stairway or the many missing people during the Chinese opium days, the spirit is said to be that of a young girl for which no one can account for. Guests have reported seeing the apparition, describing her as a Hispanic girl with long dark hair dressed in a white nightgown. One guest who claimed to have made contact with the spirit said her name was Eve or Eva. While most guests of the historic inn report getting a good night's sleep, others have said they felt their bed shake or someone touching their arms. The most unusual phenomenon is that of the ghost sometimes. Excuse me, sorry. Let me start over. The most unusual phenomenon is that of the ghost sometimes seems to appear in photographs. One such photograph that owner John Holst will frequently show his guests is a 1934 picture of the unsmiling faces of Lagina Mora, his 5th wife, Clara, and his 25th child, Carmina. Oddly, the photograph also portrays a woman behind the counter standing before a mirror who is smiling broadly. The woman is not reflected in the mirror she stands in front of. Might this be the mysterious Eva? Now called the Red Garter Inn, it is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. It is a wonderful bed and breakfast experience that downplays the story of Eva as greatly exaggerated. Still, though, the legend and experiences of the past will live on in Williams. So,
interesting.
Yes. Now, those stairs sound like it better be worth it to get to the top of the stairs. That's all I can say.
What do you think? At one point they were.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Now it's time to leave Arizona and we're going to head out to New Mexico. Tracy, you want to talk about our next stop?
So the next one we're going to is Ghosts of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Albuquerque Press Club, originally built as a family residence in 1903, was called the Whittlesey House. Over the years, it passed into various hands, one at a time. Many of the rooms were rented to people who were convalescing from 2 nearby sanitariums. Today, the building serves as a nightclub, and most of the phenomena are the many strange sounds heard by the staff and visitors. High-heeled shoes are often heard walking across the bar in knobby areas. The piano sometimes plays of its own accord. A strange voice is sometimes heard. The apparition of a woman in a black shawl on the staff calls Miss M has appeared to numerous people over the years. The Arroyo, the spirit of La Llorona,
La Llorona.
Weeping woman, is said said she wandered along with this draining ditch, crying, searching for her lost children. Thought to have murdered her own children, or murdered her children long ago, the legend is often told to the children by their parents to get them to behave. Carrie Tingley, Children's Hospital, there's a lot here, huh? Allegedly, there were bright rooms seen in unused portions of the hospital, an invisible force field to sometimes stop people from passing through the doors and hallways. These barriers make a hissing sound when encountered. Also reported the sounds of sobbing voices and heartbeats, black robed figures seen in darkened hallways. Church Street Cafe, this 18-room hacienda nestled in the heart of Old Town, dates back to 1709, originally built in the residence of the Ruiz family. It's referred to as Casa de Ruiz for nearly 200 years, one of the oldest structures in the state of New Mexico. It remained the Ruiz family until its last family member, Rufina G. Ruiz, died in 1991, at 91. After Marie Coleman purchased the property and began renovations for the Church Street Cafe, it was found that the building continued to be inhabited by a spirit of Rufina Ruiz's mother, a woman named Sarah Ruiz, known to be the curandera or healer. Sarah was not happy with renovations, and she once yelled at Marie when she brought a contractor, "Get him out of here now!" Once the contractor was finally hired, buckets began to get kicked around mysteriously. These types of antics continued until Marie began to talk to the spirit. Employees have seen spirits. Sarah's spirit in the cafe, dressed in a long black dress, and several customers have felt her presence. Haunted Hill. That sounds like an interesting place I wanted to go to.
I think I saw that movie.
Manuel, thank you. Boulevard in the foothills. Allegedly, visitors have heard the sounds of screaming, phantom footsteps, and bodies being dragged. According to the legend, an older man lived in the caves at the top of the hills, sometimes bringing prostitutes there and killing them. Other reports tell of the apparition of an older man walking and swinging a lantern by unseen hands. I think I've heard that one. Then there's Chemo Theater. The Chemo, a Pueblo Deco picture palace, was opened on September 19th of 1927. No institution stands throughout time without something bad happening, and the Chemo is no exception. In 1951, a six-year-old boy named Bobby Darnell was killed when the boiler in the basement exploded, demolishing part of the original lobby. The boy was wearing a striped shirt and blue jeans, and is often seen playing the lobby staircase. He's also known to play numerous impish tricks, such as tripping the actors and creating a ruckus during performances. To appease the spirit, cast hangs donuts on the water pipe that runs along the theater, along the theater's back wall and behind the stage.
I wonder how often they have to change them out. Sorry.
Once per
probably every show.
Yeah.
Luna Mansion is actually located in Los Lunas, New Mexico, a nearby suburb of Albuquerque. The Luna Otero Mansion is known for its excellent steaks, hot chili, and tempting desserts. But that's not all it's known for. Also renowned for its resident ghosts. Inside this 1881 mansion-turned-restaurant, there have been many reported sightings of the ghost of Josefita Otero, who seemingly prefers the second-floor bedrooms and stairway. Other reported phenomena include chairs that move independently, pots and pans that are often heard rattling, and otherwise at the kitchen. The Maria Teresa Restaurant, beautiful old hacienda-turned-restaurant, dates back to 1783. It was built by Salvador Armijo. Today it has the dubious distinction of being one of New Mexico's most haunted buildings. At least four different spirits have been seen wandering through the restaurant on various occasions. Other phenomena include a piano that seemingly plays of its own accord, employees touched by unseen hands, reflections of ghosts appearing in mirrors, and unseen voices. Flatware and tables that mysteriously move on their own. Rancho de Corrales, not actually in Albuquerque, but 15 miles north of the city in Corrales, This gracious Altoff hacienda was built in 1801 by Diego Montoya. This brawny adobe home with thick walls and heavily timbered ceilings was at first a peaceful oasis surrounded by orchards. However, that all changed when Luis and Berto purchased the property in 1883. Some 5 years after they moved in, a bloody shootout occurred. It all started when Luis discovered that his wife was having an affair and moved out of the hacienda, promising to return and kill both her and her lover. In April 89, he made good on this promise and shot his wife twice. An armed posse soon surrounded the hacienda, and the gun battle then ensued. Luis was struck down due to the scandalous circumstances of the couple's death. They were not allowed a proper burial in the church cemetery. The remains were interred across the irrigation ditch from the west of the building.
That's what they did in the day.
Yep.
You still can't.
Today,
be
the
buried.
Restless pair continued to make their presence known as at the hacienda turned restaurant. Reported activities include items seemingly moving on their own, sounds of disembodied voices, and a woman's appearance in 1800s era clothing. Others have heard the sound of midnight parties in the old hacienda. The Wool Warehouse Theater Restaurant. This building is a National Historic Landmark, built in 1929 by a prominent wool businessman, Frank Bond, and its New Mexico headquarters, designed by T. Charles Gastra, who had recently returned from a trip to Egypt. The building prominently displays Egyptian influence. Today, the historic building is part of the DoubleTree Hotel complex, encompassing some 5,000 square feet. The Wool Warehouse Theater Restaurant is housed on the second floor. During performances, a man in a cream-colored double-breasted suit has been known to have appeared on stage, thought to be Mr. Bond himself. The spirit seems pleasant and is also known to watch productions from the side stage happily. On the other hand, the stairs behind the stage that lead to the basement area are thought to hold more malevolent spirit. Employees have reported feeling pushed by unseen hands, or something, or someone grabs their ankles. Pardon me.
You're forgiven.
Sorry, breathing is fun.
When you can do it.
And fundamental. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. Something grabs their ankles and a strange noise emanating from the walls. This has frightened some to such extent that they refuse to go in the basement. Other paranormal activities reported are the feeling of hot and cold spots, being watched, mysteriously moving items.
Z-Link
building.
Yep.
Dang it. Today, this building serves as a technology development center, but this has not always been the case. No figure. The building once served as a mental health hospital. Today, the staff report mysterious banging sounds throughout the building, groans heard in the courtyard, and whispers in the back office area. Others tell of objects that seemingly move from their own accord and shadowy figures seen moving along the hallways.
Well, thank you for that, Tracy.
Poor thing.
You got through
it. Okay, then we have more on other ones, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It looks like we'll get blowing more information on the snippets I just read.
Well, it sounds like if you want to go see haunted stuff, you go to Albuquerque.
You know, there's stuff in Southern California and Arizona, too. I mean, there's lots of haunted stuff. We're going through this Route 66. And it's not just every state has haunted this or haunted that.
Now, I have to wonder about the next one on the list, because I think we already talked about it for the Arizona part of the tour here. But here it is again in New Mexico, the Haunted Chemo Theater.
I think I did a little blurb of it right here a few seconds ago.
Yep, that's probably what it is. That's what I'm thinking of. Okay, well, Adri, would you like to talk about that, please?
Sure.
Okay.
The Chemo Theater, a Pueblo Deco picture palace, was opened on September 19th, 1927 by Oreste Bacchi, a motivated entrepreneur from humble origins who came to the United States in 1885. Winding up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, he soon set up a business in a tent near the railroad tracks. As the city expanded, so did Bacchi's Back of cheese. This so did his business as he became a liquor dealer and proprietor of a grocery store. His wife, Maria, ran a dry goods store in the Elms Hotel. As his fortune expanded, he began the Bacchi Amusement Association in 1919, which operated the pastime theater with Joe Barnett.
I think they should strike that name because you have trouble saying it, don't you?
I think everybody would have trouble saying that name. Yes. It's kind of, if all I need to do is hear it once by somebody who knows how to say it. But
well, I can actually think of two translations of that name. Bacchi is one of them. The other one would be Bacchi.
Yeah. So, I mean, you don't know. Yep. I apologize for my pronunciation, everybody, but oh well, here we go.
We don't know.
In 1925, Oresti decided to achieve his true dream, building his own theater. Envisioning a unique Southwestern style, he soon hired an architect to design it. Winding up with the Pueblo Deco style, this architectural style was a flamboyant, short-lived fashion that fused the spirit of the Native American cultures with Art Deco. Built for $150,000, the theater opened on September 19, 1927. When silent movies were the all-consuming rage of Americans, a contest was run to name the new theater, and Pablo Abeta won the magnificent prize of $50 for the unique name of Chemo. Chemo is a combination of two Indian words, literally meaning mountain lion, but more liberally interpreted as king of its kind. Just 1 year after realizing his dream, Oresto died, leaving the management of the Chemo to his sons, who soon combined vaudeville and out-of-town road shows with movies. Over the years, the Chemo featured such stars as Vivian Vance, Gloria Swanson, Tom Mix, Ginger Rogers, and many others.
Maybe we can just help you out by calling the guy Obi.
Oreste. His name is Oreste.
Yes. Oreste Bacchi. We can call him Obi.
Okay.
That's easier for you.
Stop. He's dead. He's not going to feature any more into this. Okay, he might be. We don't know.
But he might care.
No institution stands throughout this time without something bad happening, and the Chemo is no exception. In 1951, a six-year-old boy named Bobby Darnell was killed when the boiler in the basement exploded, demolishing part of the original lobby. The boiler was located right beneath the concession stand in the lobby. Bobby, who had been sitting in the theater balcony with some of his friends, suddenly was frightened by something on the screen and ran down the stairs to the lobby. Just as he arrived, the boiler exploded, taking Bobby and part of the lobby in its wake of destruction. The spirit of little Bobby is said to continue to haunt the Chemo Theater today. Another tragedy occurred at the Chemo when, in 1963, a fire destroyed the original 1927 stage and damaged much of the rest of the building.
I wonder what it was that scared him.
Who knows?
But whatever scared him basically drove him to his death.
I don't know.
Very strange. Anyway.
It's lost to history.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Soon after, like many American cities, Albuquerque experienced a mass exodus from downtown, and the beautiful Chemo Theater began to fall into disrepair. Slated for the wrecking ball, the Chemo was saved in 77. When the citizens of Albuquerque voted to purchase the beautiful, that was 1977, purchased the beautiful building. Since then, several stages of restoration have returned the theater to its former glory. The Chemo Theater now serves as a performing arts center with seating for 700. Whoa. And it is on the National Register of Historic Places. And then there are the ghosts. Not only is the old theater home to poor Bobby Darnell, who died in 1951 explosion, but also to a mysterious lady who is seen walking along the hallways. This unknown woman wearing a bonnet has often been reported walking down the theater halls, appearing to be just going about her business. Nothing more is known of this ghostly presence, but seemingly she doesn't disturb anyone. She just likes strolling about the old theater. However, Bobby is a much more prevalent force and has been known to play all kinds of impish tricks upon staff. Well, he's six. Guests of the old theater often seen playing on the lobby staircase, Bobby wears a striped shirt and blue jeans. According to the legend, the playful spirit causes the performers problems by tripping them and creating a ruckus during performances. To appease the spirit, the donut one. Yep. Often the treats are gone the next morning. Of those left, bite marks made by a little mouth can sometimes be seen.
Well, that answers your question about what happens to the donuts.
1 year, a crew preparing for a Christmas production took down the stale donuts by mistake. No sooner were the donuts removed when the technical rehearsal started to become a disaster, with everything going wrong from lighting to sound problems and more. When the treats were replaced, things began to run smoothly again.
So what have we learned? Always pack the donuts.
Don't mess with stuff until you know why it's there.
Yep. But those donuts are stale. Doesn't matter.
Have tempers.
Yes, they do.
Six-year-olds are persistent little buggers, and if you take away their patterns, their tempers come out.
Yep.
Wow. Hey, sorry, guys. Dogs want to play under my chair, and it's just a little distracting. So let's move on to the Haunted La Fonda Hotel in Santa Fe.
That's you.
Yes, that's me.
Okay. Sorry, dear.
At 100 East San Francisco Street in the historic district of Santa Fe, New Mexico, sits the historic La Fonda Hotel. This old hotel has been providing a pillow for weary travelers since 1922, but the location itself has been called home to some kind of inn or fonda since Santa Fe's earliest days. When Santa Fe was founded in 1607, records show that the inn on this location was one of the first businesses established in the new settlement. According to local lore, court was held in the original Adobe Hotel, as well as executions when guilty offenders were hanged in the lobby. Over the years, the hotel was destroyed and rebuilt several times over. In 1821, when Captain William Becknell blazed the path that would become known as the Santa Fe Trail, he stayed at La Fonda, where the trail terminated at the town's central plaza. As more and more pioneers traveled to Santa Fe, the La Fonda became a popular destination for trappers, traders, mountain men, soldiers, politicians, and the like. Soon after New Mexico became a U.S. territory in 1848, the inn was purchased by Anglo-American owners who changed its name to the U.S. Hotel. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm. Let's whitewash everything.
Yes.
Sorry.
The gambling hall continued to be a major feature, however, providing entertainment for military officers and the occasional professional gambler. Fortunes were made and lost here, and one unfortunate person lost his life in 1857 at the end of a rope strung up in the hotel's backyard by a lynch mob. 10 years later, in 1867, the Honorable John P. Slow, Chief Justice of the Territorial Supreme Court, was shot to death in the hotel lobby. Slow was in dispute with Captain Reinerson, a member of the territorial legislature representing Donna Anna County, when Slow called Reinerson a liar and a thief. The offended Reinerson then shot Slow, who died of his wounds. Though Reinerson was tried, he was later acquitted. Around the same time, the hotel was sold again and became the Exchange Hotel, the name under which it operated for nearly six decades.
Slew,
thank you.
Sorry. When you said that, I was thinking...
Slow.
Yeah.
The judge is slow. Yeah. Okay.
No. P. Slow.
Oh, okay. I get it.
I was like, and I'm like, no, that's not right. Sorry.
So more than a century ago, a distraught salesman, sorry folks, who lost his company's money in a card game, leaped to his death down a deep well that was located just outside the gambling hall of the Exchange Hotel. The current La Fonda was built in 1922 on the site of the previous inns. In 1925, it was acquired by the Atchison, Topeka, Santa Fe Railroad, which leased it to Fred Harvey. For more than 40 years, from 1926 to 1968, La Fonda was one of the famous Harvey Houses, a renowned chain of fine hotels. Excuse me. Today, the La Fonda Hotel is said to host not only travelers visiting Santa Fe, but also several ghosts. Some people believe that the Honorable Judge Slew continues to walk its hallways. However, more often reported is the ghost of the distraught salesman who jumped into the well after losing all of his company's money. The hotel's dining room, called the La Plazuela, is situated directly over the old well, and both guests and staff alike have reported the sight of a ghostly figure that walks to the center of the room, then seemingly jumps into the floor and disappears. Other reported phenomena include an apparition that haunts the Santa Fe room, as well as a spirit that walks the hallways near the La Terraza, a restaurant located on the east side of the hotel's third floor. In the 1970s, a guest reportedly called the front desk to complain that someone was walking up and down the hallway in front of his room. When an employee was sent to investigate, he saw a tall man in a long black coat disappear into a stairwell. However, when he followed him to the stairs, there was no sign of the mysterious visitor. Today, the La Fonda Hotel is a vibrant historic landmark on Santa Fe's downtown plaza, known for its award-winning architecture and decor. unique artwork. Since 1968, La Fonda has been locally owned and operated and has continued the same tradition of providing warm hospitality, excellent service, and modern amenities.
The processing of commercial information is complete. Back to the show.
So the haunted La Posada Hotel in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We continue on our tour. Located in 6 historically rich acres of downtown Santa Fe, New Mexico, this historic La Posada Hotel, within its beautiful landscape grounds and fountains, sits the hotel's centerpiece, the Staub House, a Victorian mansion built by old Santa Fe trail merchant in 1882. Amassing a fortune as a major city supplier contractor for the U.S. Army during the Civil War, Abraham Staub built the beautiful three-story brick mansion for his wife, Julia. Constructed in the French Second Empire style, the residence was decorated with the finest European materials and furnishings. The large Staub family, including 6 children, primarily lived in the second floor, accessed by a grand staircase. On the third floor was a beautiful ballroom, which soon became one of the social entertainment centers of Santa Fe society, as Julia loved to show off the home that she adored. However, the Staub family's fairy tale was to end when Julia's 7th child, a son, died soon after his birth. Pardon me. Equally affecting, Julia, she dived into a deep depression, and her hair was said to have turned prematurely white. After the child's death, Julia underwent several more unsuccessful pregnancies and eventually took to her room, where she spent most of her time until her death at age of 52 in 1896. Rumors at the time persisted that in Julia's later years, she had gone completely crazy. The surviving 6 Staub children grew up in the house and upon its spacious grounds. In the early 1900s, the original third floor ballroom was destroyed by a fire. Abraham Staub died in 1913. In the 1930s, R.H. and Julia Nason became the owners of the Staub house, surrounded by and the surrounding estate, with plans to turn the property into a hotel. They soon constructed a series of Pueblo Revival-style adobe casitas around the existing Staub mansion and carriage house. The Nasons called their new business La Posada, Spanish for inn or resting place. In the years to follow, the La Posada became a popular place to be for the arts community. A summer art school held there every summer drew many guests who were leaders in the Santa Fe arts and movement. Over the years, La Posada de Santa Fe has served the world literature and cinema by accommodating numerous writers and other well-known personalities. However, legend has it that not only has La Posada hosted these famous guests, as well as thousands of travelers who enjoy the hotel's romantic ambiance, but the ghost of Julia Staub reportedly. Mrs. Staub loved her home so much that she's never left it. Numerous reports have been made that Julia Staub's spirit continues to interfere with the hotel employees and guests. One of the first recorded reports in 1979 tells an employee who is cleaning late at night and looks up to see a beautifully dressed, translucent woman standing near the fireplace. On another occasion, a security guard saw the same woman and was so scared he took off running. A hotel operator reported that he saw her reposing in an armchair. In all 3 cases, the spirit vanishes shortly after she appears. More recent reports include a bartender who states that during the particularly busy evening, glasses suddenly begin to fly off shelves, one by one, crashing to the floor. On the same night, the fireplace kept turning on and off, seemingly of its own accord, and a seasoned waitress continually dropped trays, reporting that it felt as if someone had pushed up from underneath. Julia's alleged spirit has been the subject of many ghost tours, as well as having been featured in the popular television shows Unsolved Mysteries and Weird Travels. After extensive renovation in the late 1990s that included construction of the additional lodging, a Avanu Spa, and a conference center, La Posada opened up as a member of Rock Resorts, the cluster of adobe casitas. Many of the patio entrances reflect the resort's heritage and one of Santa Fe's first tourist ports. La Posada caters to sophisticated travelers who appreciate the resort's southwestern charm, extraordinary services, and romantic ambiance.
Cool. As long as you don't encounter Mrs. Staub.
She'll, you know, make sure you know that this is her home.
That's right. Are you ready to go to our next stop here?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us all about it.
Haunted Santa Fe, New Mexico. Santa Fe, New Mexico, established in 1607, is the third oldest city founded by European colonists in the United States. Only St. Augustine, Florida, and Jamestown, Virginia are older. Its long history of Indians, Spanish, Mexicans, and pioneers has led the city to be one of the most haunted in America. Furthermore, the city was built over an abandoned Tohono Indian village where no doubt Indian burial grounds might be found beneath the city's depths.
Watch out, Indian burial grounds.
Santa Fe is one of the few cities that offers a full schedule of ghost tours and ghost walks year-round, with as many as five operators conducting tours from Santa Fe's historic plaza. These tours primarily focus on the 10-block historic area of Santa Fe, featuring such places as La Posada and La Fonda Hotels, the Grand Corner Inn, Palace of Governors, the oldest house in the nation, and other historic buildings. Some tours include area superstitions as well as Santa Fe's history of vigilantes, gunfights, murders, and hangings. Whether you take a tour or stumble upon its many ghosts on your own, here are a few of Santa Fe's ghostly legends. Alto Street. Reportedly, a headless horseman haunts this street, riding his horse down to the Santa Fe River, brandishing a sword. It is said that he lost his head to two Spanish witches after complaining about a love potion they gave him. Most often, this headless cowboy is sighted near the riverbank. Casa Real Health Care Center. At this senior health care facility at 501 Galisto Street, employees, patients, and visitors have complained of strange happenings ever since the facility was built in 1985. Constructed over the site of an old penitentiary graveyard next to another haunted building, most people say the oppressive, uncomfortable feeling emanates from this building. Others have reported strange cold spots moving through the rooms, and unexplained moaning is often heard in the north and south wings. Grant Corner Inn, just a few steps off Santa Fe's historic plaza, sits the historic Grant Corner Inn. The house was originally built in 1905 by a couple new to Santa Fe area. Unfortunately for the young couple, shortly after they built their new home, a sickly son was born who required constant attention. To make matters worse, the woman's husband died shortly thereafter. The young mother soon remarried a man who was said to have not been a very nice person. Over the years, the child continued to get worse, and the mother threw herself into caring for the young boy. During this time, visitors to the home would often report hearing the young boy crying and banging on the walls of his upstairs room while his mother was downstairs visiting. Confined to a wheelchair, the boy was said to have continually rolled too close to the stairway, tumbling down, wheelchair and all, to the landing below. The child finally died of his ailments, and the woman and her husband moved away. Afterward, when the house was empty, neighbors would often report seeing lights in the upstairs room that had belonged to the boy. When someone finally purchased the house, the new owners reported hearing noises in the child's room as if he was still there. Today, the house has been converted into a bed and breakfast. Art Garcia, former caretaker for the B&B, was interviewed by Antonio Garces for his book Adobe Angels, Ghosts of the Santa Fe and Taos. The caretaker relayed terrifying happenings within the home. In this account, Garcia tells of deafening noises, blasts of freezing air that would often kill houseplants, and the terrible aroma of rotting meat. Ew. However, since the property was purchased by Louise Stewart, the building has been extensively remodeled, and the spirit of the boy has quieted down or perhaps left the building entirely. However, rumors persist that objects continue to fall to the floor, while footsteps and slamming doors are often heard within the old house. Others have reported seeing a grayish figure in the hallway. Reportedly, rooms 4 and 8, as well as the hallway upstairs, are the areas reported to be haunted.
Today, this lovely bed and breakfast, voted the best in Santa Fe by several local periodicals, is a charming 10-room inn surrounded by a white picket fence and weeping willows. The inn provides old-fashioned hospitality, comfortable, well-appointed accommodations, and innovative country cuisine. Rooms are decorated with antique quilts, brass, and four-poster beds, hand-painted armoires, and numerous pieces of antique and art that combine to make each room unique, a unique experience.
Now, before you continue, I wanted to interject here.
Okay.
The whole story is about the little boy who's sick.
Uh-huh.
In a wheelchair and somehow tumbles down the stairs, wheelchair and all.
Uh-huh.
And then the reports are not only about the apparition of the little boy, but a gray figure upstairs in that hallway too. So my inquisitive mind wonders if maybe the whole
nanny
thing,
or dad,
the whole thing was not an accident.
Stepdad killed the boy to get the mother to go with him.
Or the mother had had enough and pushed her down the stairs. Who knows? That's just where my mind went with that story. I'm sorry.
I can understand it. Never knew.
But that would definitely account for a haunting if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
Laguna Pueblo Mission. The coffin of the murdered priest keeps popping up through the church floor here. Father Juan Padilla was murdered by Indians in 1733 and was buried beneath the floor at the Isleta Pueblo Church. Before long, his coffin hollowed out of a cottonwood tree rose out of the earth in front of the altar. It rose again 20 years later and again in 1889. Then on Christmas Eve 1914, it poked through the floor again. Okay. Two investigations were conducted by the Bishop of Santa Fe, but no conclusion was reached as to the nature of the phenomenon.
It was not proselytizing. I don't know.
Maybe he wasn't killed by who they thought he was killed by.
Maybe.
Maybe it was somebody in the church. La Residencia, now housing a nursing home, this building at the corner of Palace Avenue and Paseo de Pereyra was once the community hospital. Years ago, a little boy died in room 311 from injuries suffered in an automobile accident. Unfortunately, the boy's father also died in the same car wreck. Today, the muffled crying of the little boy is heard so often that administrators try to keep the room unoccupied. Other paranormal occurrences also happen in the basement. This only began to occur when the State Museum began to utilize the basement to store Indian artifacts. Reportedly, strange sounds are often heard in the basement rooms, so often that some nurses refuse to enter the area. On one occasion, two nurses reported seeing a wall in the basement oozing fresh blood. La Residencia is located at 820 Paseo de Peralta. Mission of San Miguel, the oldest church still in use in the United States. This simple earth-hue adobe structure was built around 1610 by the
Tlaxcan
Indians of Mexico who came to New Mexico as servants of the Spanish. Though badly damaged in the 1860 Pueblo Revolt, the sturdy adobe walls remained unharmed. Stone buttresses later were added to strengthen the walls. The tower was remodeled and a modern facade was added. On display in the chapel are priceless statues and paintings and the San Jose Bell, weighing nearly 800 pounds, which is believed to have been cast in Spain in 1356. The bell was used in churches in Spain and Mexico before being brought to Santa Fe by ox cart in the early 19th century.
Before you go further, I just wanted to state to our listeners, we are definitely butchering the names. We don't mean to. Our pronunciations are off, but we're doing the best we can.
Yes, our pronunciations.
We are. Hey, I'm sick. I can't even say the word pronunciation. Okay, we're doing our best. So I apologize for anybody who might be offended.
We're all sick and trying our best here.
Yeah,
that's all I'm gonna say.
You know where to, send your comments. So if you have any comments about our the way we talk on the show, then please send them forward. We'll do what we can.
I promise.
If not,
nothing.
Well, hey, we're doing our best.
Yeah.
So anyway, please continue, dear.
This old bell is said to have been the source of a miracle in the mid-1800s when a blind man attended the church at around noon every day. His fervent prayers are said to have caused the bell to ring of its own accord. And when it rang, the man regained his sight. Unfortunately, when the ringing stopped, he lost his sight again, but was later able to accurately describe statues and icons inside the church.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Get your sight back just while the
bell's
ringing.
It's just a tease, you know?
Yeah.
The gift shop.
It gave me a thought of Robin Hood, Men in Tights, when Blinken falls off the duck that the blind at night and his glasses slip down. I can see. Nope, still blind. That was a thought that came to mind. The ringing of the bell is there. I can see. Nope.
Anyway.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. That makes me think.
The gift shop at the church that once served as a private residence was reportedly haunted by a small child who died there in the 1940s. Across the narrow street from the church is the oldest house in the United States, which is supposedly haunted by a malevolent presence. In fact, the entire block surrounding San Miguel dates back to the 1200s and was once the site of an ancient Indian pueblo. For centuries, tragic and violent events have occurred within this block, including the subjugation of the Pueblo Indians, the Pueblo Revolt against the Spanish in 1680, executions of convicted criminals, and much more. Not only is the church and the oldest house said to be home to a ghost or two, but the entire block is.
Okie dokie.
More and more, it sounds like New Mexico is the place to go if you're a ghost hunter. Paranormal investigator, I mean. Sorry, I should never have said ghost hunter. That's wrong talk.
No, we're not hunting ghosts for sport. Hello.
Yes, we're not going to mount a ghost on our wall.
No, we're not trophy hunting ghosts. No.
I'm sorry, you were saying, Tracy?
We just need to go from state to state to state.
We need to get like a little mini RV thing going on and just take off and do some states here and there, a little stuff here and there, and then come back and up again and go back out. Just for you know.
You know what's and giggles? Yeah. Huh? You know what's and giggles?
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
I don't know. Ouch. Oh,
you have a kitty in your arms.
I have something that's demanding attention.
Well, then give it attention while I read on.
Okay.
It is my turn, right?
Yes.
Okay. Our next stop is the Haunted Luna Mansion in Las Lunas, New Mexico. The Luna Otero Mansion in Las Lunas, New Mexico, was known for its great steaks, hot chili, and great desserts. Sounds really good. Mm-hmm. But that's not all it's known for. Evidently, it's also renowned for its resident ghosts. In 1692, Domingo de Luna was granted land by the King of Spain in what would later become Las Lunas, New Mexico. A few years later, Don Pedro Otero arrived under similar circumstances. Over the years, the two families added to their fortunes through livestock and additional land acquisitions. Both families became extremely powerful and were involved in politics. The marriages of Solomon Luna to Adelaida Otero and Manuel A. Otero to Eloisa Luna in the late 1800s united these two families into what became known as the Luna-Otero dynasty. When the Santa Fe Railroad wanted a right-of-way through the Luna property in 1880, the proposed railroad tracks were planned directly through the Luna Hacienda. In order to gain the right-of-way, the railroad agreed to build a new home for Antonio Jose Luna and his family according to their specifications. Before long, a southern colonial-style mansion built within adobe materials of the Southwest was completed for the family. However, Antonio Jose died in 1881, the same year that the house was completed. As a result, his oldest son, Tranquilino and his family were the first to live in the luxurious home. Thank you. I got it. Now I got to say it again. No, I won't. When he died in 1892, his younger brother Solomon took the reins of the empire and moved into the spacious mansion. In the early 1900s, control passed to Solomon's nephew, Eduardo Otero, because Solomon had not had children. In the 1920s, multiple improvements to the mansion were made, including the addition of a solarium, a front portico, and ironwork that surrounded the entire property. It was Eduardo's wife, Josefita, more familiarly known as Pepe, that was largely responsible for these many efforts. The daughter of William R. Vanderfield, founder of the Santa Fe New Mexican, Josefita lovingly spent her days caring for her magnificent gardens and improving her fine home. Over the years, the mansion changed hands several times before it was purchased and renovated as a fine dining establishment in the 1970s. It was then that the ghost of Josefita began to appear. Perhaps she didn't like the renovations, or maybe she just wants to stick around to make sure they were doing a good job on the home that she spent so many years looking after. Maybe she hated the cooking. I don't know. Dressed in 1920s period clothing, she has been described by employees as appearing very real. Most often, she's seen in two former bedrooms on the second floor, an attic storeroom, and at the top of the stairs leading to the second floor bar. At the top of the stairs sits an old rocking chair, which she has often been seen sitting in and rocking slowly. On one occasion, when an employee approached the ghostly apparition, she simply stood up and then slowly vanished. More often, she's seen walking up and down the stairs, a habit that has been so commonplace that employees barely notice anymore. Where there's one spirit, others seem to follow, and more ghostly apparitions have been seen at the mansion. One of these was a former servant named Cruz, who was thought to have been a groundskeeper. Most often seen on the main level, he's said to be particularly friendly to women and children and likes to play practical jokes on the employees and patrons. On one occasion, he was seen sitting on a sofa as if waiting to be served. Dressed in vintage attire, the man was relaxing patiently when a waitress asked another staff member why he hadn't been served. However, the response was, "What man?" And when the waitress looked back to the sofa, the vintage spirit faded away. The Luna Otero Mansion on the National Register of Historic Places is located at 110 West Main in Los Lunas, New Mexico, just west of the junction of Highway 314 and Highway 6. The fine dining establishment fell victim to the 2020 COVID pandemic, mandated shutdowns, and decided to close its doors for good in June of 2020. It's unknown as of this update what's next for the historic mansion. I hope it opens again. I hope it's already open. I'll have to look that up, see if I can find that out. So I think we're done with New Mexico. Shall we move on to Texas?
Sure.
I noticed when I looked this up, there's only one place of note in Texas. I think that's funny. As big as Texas is, there's just one location on the route.
Go figure.
But anyway, Tracy, I think it's
yours. Perhaps it's all that's left.
Yep. Could be.
Route 66 has been systematically destroyed in places.
It's possible, yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway, whenever you're ready, Tracy.
So this is the haunted natatorium in Amarillo, Texas. Old Route 66 through the 6th Street in Amarillo, Texas is the home to the natatorium. Familiarly called the Nat, and according to locals, a few unearthly spirits as well. This area, listed on the National Register of Historic Places, has been fashionably restored to an antique district full of collectibles, boutiques, and street-side cafes. Natatorium is an old-fashioned word for an indoor swimming pool when this building opened in July of 1922, exactly what it housed. However, in 1926, J.D. Tucker purchased the pool building and turned it into a dance palace. Covering the pool over with a fine wooden dance floor, the Nat Ballroom began to cater to flappers in the Roaring Twenties. The Depression brought many changes to the nation, and the Nat offered a variety of promotions to continue to entice guests to the ballroom. Suffering through this period, the Nat was bought by Harry Badger, in the early 1930s, and in 1935 he added the castle-like facade of the Nat Cafe, which provided an entrance to the dance floor from Route 66, and renamed the business to the Nat Dine and Dance Palace.
I wonder if he got teased in school with a name like that.
Uh-huh.
Harry Badger.
You know, it's about as bad as to name your son Robin, and your last name is Cheatham. That's okay.
True.
Anywho. Ushering in the big band era, the Nat once had the finest dance floors in the Southwest, as groups such as Tommy Dorsey, Louis Armstrong, Benny Goodman, Duke Ellington, and Guy Lombardo entertained many guests. With the advent of rock and roll, the Nat continued to entertain the likes of Little Richard, Roy Orbison, Buddy Holly, and the Crickets. In its prime, the ballroom employed a staff of 52 people to help produce its entertainment events and serve the many happy customers of the Nat. Many old-timers who learned to swim in the Nat could later recall the fabulous Friday night dances that they attended during these fabulous glory days. Several years ago, when the Nat was purchased and renovated for an antique mall, owners and guests would notice cold spots upon entering the upstairs room. Once utilized as a gambling hall, on other occasions, the strange noises could be heard with no one there, and the owner would arrive to find furniture rearranged during the night. According to one psychic, a female apparition who spent many hours in the gambling hall appears in a white dress and red stain on the bodice. According to the legend, the lady was having a grand time one evening when another patron spilled a glass of red wine on her dress. Obviously, she had so much fun, she was reluctant to leave. The ballroom floor is said to be also popular with the spirits. When the bands still play at the Nat, the ghostly couples can be seen gliding along the hardwood floors.
It's okay, Tracy. Couples can be people too.
Huh?
I said it's okay. Couples can be people too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I'm just losing my mind today.
It's all right. Sorry. Please continue.
In 1996, the Nat conducted an all-night ghost investigation, complete with video cameras and tape recorders. Though the investigators had many difficulties with the cameras as they mysteriously shut themselves off, they did obtain a voice recording of it and a drum playing solo in the background, the sound of a woman singing. Another reminder that the spirits are seemingly unwilling to give up the splendor of the past is the outside wall of the building. Legend has it that although it was first painted over in 1942, and several times since then, the words Monty McGee and his orchestra continue to bleed through time and time again. In 1994, the Nat was placed in the National Register of Historic Places and became a Texas historical landmark in 1995. It continued to host big name bands for a while, including the Dixie Chicks, Coup de Grace, and Joe Eli. Under the new owners, the building was restored and renovated and continues to be an antique mall, which still occasionally hosts bands and hopes to include the cafe and a movie screen someday. For more news on the Amarillo Natatorium, please see our friends on Route 66 News. The Nat's a prime example of a whimsical roadway architecture and is located on the 6th in Georgia at Old Route 66 in Amarillo, Texas. 666, for anyone looking there.
Good catch. I didn't notice that.
What?
666.
Well, at the beginning, they talk about, you know, it's located 6th in Georgia on Route 66. And they make it again, 6th in Route 66.
Yep, 666. How about that?
Goodness.
And that's it for tonight. We actually got through 3 states tonight, which I think is pretty awesome.
Yay!
Especially for us.
Yep. And sick on top of it all.
Yeah, and we're sick. All of us in our own way are sick.
Laughter is the best medicine. I'm glad we got a couple chuckles tonight.
Yep.
I hope everybody.
It also loosens up all the phlegm. So.
Yeah. Well, I hope everybody's enjoying this series. It is a series. We'll be doing a part 3 later. Next time we record, in about 2 weeks' time. So, everybody, hope you're enjoying this. If you have questions or you have information on these routes that we don't know about,
share.
Please share with us. Yeah, send us a message. Email us, whatthepodcastfacebook.com. Send us a message through the link in this podcast. Send us a message through our Facebook group page. However you want to do it.
Let us know what you think.
If you've been, if you've been on the route, I really want to hear from you. You know, if you've ever traveled Route 66 for any reason, if you have anything you want to talk about the trip.
My sister drove through it and didn't stop. So
yeah, well, she told us that last time we recorded. So bummer there. But anyway,
she does it often too.
I know all that time.
She drives back and forth to Texas to see her dad and. I think before her grandma passed away.
She doesn't have time to stop her, go see hitchhikers or anything.
No.
Yep. Oh, well. But if you have, let us know.
Definitely want to hear it.
Gotta want to hear about those stories. Yeah. Gotta want it. And I gotta want it. Until then, Tracy, thanks for joining us remotely tonight. I know being sick is no fun, and we definitely don't want to spread this virus.
No.
I mean, it's not COVID, but it's about the next worst thing you can have to it. Pretty virulent. Everybody's catching it. You know, it's the gift that keeps on giving, and I really don't want this gift, but there you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, no. From Tracy, Adrian, and myself, we hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Stay spooky, and above all, cue the gremlin.
Cue the gremlin.
What in the Podcast is a part of the What in the Podcast Network and is available on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other great podcast formats. You can find us on Facebook at the What in the Podcast Facebook group. If you have a great story idea or have a personal paranormal event that you want to share with us, email us at whatinthepodcast@gmail.com with your story, or you can leave us a voice message by clicking the link in the episode description. If you like what you're hearing, please don't forget to leave us a review and rate us 5 stars. It doesn't seem like much, but it helps us more than you can imagine. What in the Podcast is also made possible thanks to our sponsors and listeners like you. Thanks for listening.